Hello and welcome to the latest episode of the Traction Podcast, where we discuss racing games of all types for all skill sets. Today we're going to be talking about the best cars in racing games. So joining us today is someone who once led an actual motor race in real life and sim races with Jensen Button. It's John Munro.
That's the best introduction I've ever heard, and I'm sure the lead didn't last long.
And also joining us today is someone who owns a Volvo. It's Justin Sutton.
Thank you. Happy to be here and happy to own my Volvo.
Yeah, no worries. So what we're going to do today is talk about what we think are the best cars in racing games. So that's quite a broad topic. So we're going to break it down a little bit. So we're each going to go across three selections. One is our sort of current favorite car in a video game from recent times. Another one is one that we think is a bit underrated, that flies under the radar a little bit. And one is a car that's overpowered in the game, OP. And then maybe at the end, we might talk about our favorite retro racing car as well. So without further ado, I think, John, it'd be really good if you could tell me which car you really love in a racing game and why. And then me and Justin will probably disagree with you.
Thank you, Tom. That sounds like a perfect afternoon for me.
No worries.
Yeah, I get the feeling that we're all going to be covering slightly different genres in this, but I mean, we don't know each other's, yeah. Right? So I'm very intrigued to hear what you guys.
Within a racing game, if it's a vehicle, it counts.
Exactly. So as you can imagine, I've kind of gone more down my own route, which is slightly more towards the sim kind of stuff and what cars I really enjoy driving with my wheel and feel like I've, you know, really get the most out of. And for me, I've gone with the Porsche 911 GT1 on Assetto Corsa. Now, I appreciate that's a very, very specific. Wow. It maybe sounds a bit like, oh, car nerds and, you know, but I tell you what, it's just as a car to drive and as an experience, for me, it tops anything because it's tricky. It's hard to keep on the road. It's loud. It's exciting. It's got a bunch of power. And it's, as I say, yeah, it's a very niche kind of thing. But any kind of late 90s GT car for me is just such a good driving experience. And I've got to say that I'm not sure if you guys will have much experience driving this car. But for me, every time I jump in it on Assetto Corsa, I just don't want to get out of it again. I just want to pound around no matter what track. It doesn't matter if I'm racing AI on my own. It's just such a visceral experience that kind of gives you a little glimpse into the adrenaline you might get from real life. So for me, that's my current racing game car of the anything.
Well, I'll give you 8 out of 10 for your justification there. But can I just clarify which Porsche it is? Did you say GT1? So is that a homologation special? So was it the Strasser version, the road version, or the track version? You know,
I should be a bit specific. So, for me, late 90s GT racing, Le Mans and endurance racing.
GT1 class.
GT1 was the thing, and for me, I think nothing's been replicated quite like that since, because you had cars that were based on kind of road going cars. They weren't kind of spaceship like prototypes, and it was kind of like Group B of rallying, where you know you had these cars. The rules were very open to interpretation. You could put any engine in them. You could give them character. They all looked different. Some of them looked prototypey. Some of them looked like, you know, a box. And I feel like manufacturers could do whatever they wanted with them, and it gave the car so much character. And I feel like for me, that era of motorsport and GT1s in general are such a good class. So the Porsche is one of the best examples of it, and the version on Assetto Corsa is a fantastic example of a fantastic car.
Right. It's also in Automobilista 2 as well, isn't it? But Justin,
is you have a question? That's a rear wheel rear engine?
Yeah. The engine. I think it
might be a mid engine. You know?
Yeah.
Is it?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Because it's not. Oh no. We don't know.
The thing is, right?
Live Googling.
Yeah, this is one of my favorite cars of all time, and it's interesting that I don't know that. But I think because of the nature of GT1 is the manufacturers could do whatever they want, right? So you had the front engine Panos, which is also an awesome car. If you've raced on like Project Cars 2, the Panos is amazing to drive. But there was obviously every different manufacturer had a different way of going about it, and that's what made it so cool. And Porsche took the Porsche 911, and they made a car that doesn't really look anything like a Porsche 911, but it just is such an awesomely exciting car, and it's so lively, it's so raw, and as an experience to drive, I mean, it's a pain in the butt, don't get me wrong, but it's once you get the hang of it a little bit and you really start nailing it around somewhere like the Nordschleife, which you obviously couldn't do in real life, it's an amazing experience.
That was going to be my question. I was going to ask you, what is your favorite track in Assetto Corsa to take that car to? Is it the Nordschleife?
Well, I mean, that's a boring answer, but I do really enjoy it. I mean, what I used to do with it when Assetto Corsa first came out is I'd kind of go through all the different cars in the game and just drive them around Nordschleife and see how much I enjoyed them. And with the GT1, I could just lap around there for days. Really, really good. Somewhere like Laguna Seca as well, Olten Park. I think full Olten Park is a really good place. Anywhere that's quite narrow, a lot of undulation, a lot of character. And when you drive a GT1 car, and it's the same applies to like the McLaren F1 and stuff, when you're right on the limit and you know you've done a good lap, it's one of the most satisfying sim racing experiences you can have.
Yeah, it is a golden era of cars, especially because they had to make some road going variants to make it homologated for the track, which was really weird. So yes, I've just looked it up with my mate Google's helped me out, and it's rear mid engine, so it is technically a mid engine Porsche 911 when they're all rear engine. So that's interesting. So good shout
away with it.
But yeah, we got away with it ish. But let's see what Justin's chosen. And before you do, I'm going to go out on a limb and suggest that, is it from Forza Horizon?
It's not. It's actually not.
Oh, my word, it's not.
Weirdly, it's from Assetto Corsa.
Ah, interesting. Good.
Somehow we have picked the same. Again, just for the listeners, nice. We did not talk about our selections ahead of time. So that's why I was kind of laughing when you said.
Before you go on, Justin, can I just say that's a lot of praise for Assetto Corsa right there? Because, I mean, for us both to have the same game as an ultimate car means that they must be doing something right with the cars.
It is. And the car that I've chosen is, it's not like a mod or anything like that. It actually came from Kunos. And it is actually the Lotus Exige 240R. Specifically the 240R, because there are several versions of the Exige in, it's there the is- one with the big. And I think it's got a splitter as well, too, the 240R version. So it's quite downforce-y compared to the traditional Exiges and stuff like that. But it's just very pointy without being too oversteery, which is what I absolutely love about that car. The responsiveness of the front end on it is just something that I just absolutely love. And weirdly, in like Forza Horizon, because obviously everyone knows at this point that I love Forza Horizon, but I love all-wheel drive cars. But for some reason in Assetto Corsa, it's just that there's something about the grip level and like the weight distribution of the Exige 240R in Assetto Corsa where it almost has similar qualities to all-wheel drive cars, but without some of the downsides and stuff. And weirdly for me, my favorite thing to do in that car is to drive it on the Nordschleife, on the laser-scaled Nordschleife. Yeah. I've recommended that car and track combination in Assetto Corsa to people that have recently bought Assetto Corsa, like multiple times. I'm like, oh, you just bought Assetto Corsa? Take the Exige 240R on the Nordschleife.
what we need is Tom to pick like a Fiat 500 from Assetto Corsa, and then we can have our own driver training program. So he's starting to see it. Which, by the way, Justin, I think that's a superb pick. I think that car was one of the standout road cars for me, because it was such a nice balance, feeling quick and nippy and agile, and you had a lot of control over it, but it felt so much like you were driving the car rather than the car was driving you, right? It was almost like a Caterham, without some of the rawness, but with just so much more chuckability, and it was good fun. And I personally absolutely love that pick. I should also clarify, if you guys at home want to try the Porsche GT1, it is available as an official DLC pack. So it doesn't come with the base game, but it is official content. So you guys can get yourselves hold of the Porsche car pack. I'm not sure which number it is, but if you do want to try that, make sure you do that as well.
And this is Assetto Corsa, not Assetto Corsa Competizione.
Correct.
It's like the first one, which has got road cars in it and a lot more variety of the vehicles, right?
Yeah.
Interesting how that game has a lot of Lotus cars in there, whereas many other games don't. I think there's some licensing thing where they had a load of them in there before Lotus sort of went exclusive to some games. So there's like well over 10, 15 Lotus cars in the first Assetto Corsa. A lot of them are Elises.
Yeah. Every variation as well, right? Every variation. Yeah. So you had all the sizes, all the different aerodynamic packages. It was brilliant.
Yes,
brilliant.
There's like stages as well. There's like a stage 1 240R and like a stage 3 240. Like there's so many. It's insane. But yeah, just
do you have a favorite stage?
Just the bog standard 240R. Right. Yeah. Now, nice. I think I tried like the stage 3 or whatever it was, and it was too much power, too Larry. What I liked about the 240R was you could go full throttle. You know, it was quite easy in that regard. You could go full throttle at corner exit and not worry too much about the rear spinning up. I think part of that is super sticky tires as well, though. Right. Quite sticky tires that came on that car. So yeah, the grip levels are quite high. The power level is just high enough, again, to be exciting, but not to spin up the rears at corner exit too easily. So yeah, it just had that great balance for me personally.
Nice. Yeah, I think a Lotus isn't about outright power or speed, is it? It's about that right. balance and finesse where you have a good amount of power to be quick and have fun, but it's really about also precision and the handling and the balance. So that's probably why the stage really 2 and 3 doesn't do it for you as much.
Yeah, sorry, they're actually really... I've driven a couple in real life and race-prepared ones.
Oh,
and they're
in, la-di-da.
Just slide that in there, you know. We don't... We
can, yeah, yeah, I'll make yeah.
important so it can be edited out.
No, but, that's good. It's really a good experience.
I drove a couple of different ones at Silverstone in the wet, which was, and the thing that got me was just how raw that car was to drive in real life. You felt like you were on the ground. There was a lot of shaking, you know. It felt like it was a very, the cockpit was very alive. You know, I felt like it was always 2 inches away from the ground and you could hear everything so loudly. But the thing that gets me most about driving a Lotus in real life is how pointy it is, but also how quickly it can go wrong. You know, the way the weight transfers in a Lotus, it is so easy to spin a Lotus on a damp track when you turn in because of the weight distribution. And I think a set of Corsa does an amazing job of simulating that and giving you that kind of alive feeling and the balance that you would get in real life. I think, honestly, it's a fantastic version of that car.
When you said easy to go wrong, I thought you meant like the reliability of the car, you know, breaking down, because doesn't it stand for lots of trouble, usually serious?
Usually serious, yeah.
My race team that I've been with in endurance, one of our cars was a Lotus, and as you can imagine, our Mazda finished every race of the year that the Lotus was going, and it just didn't finish many, put it that way. Ah. It caught fire a lot.
But they love their cars, though. Oh, it caught fire. Yes. Oh, dear. I hope everyone's all right.
They're rare over here, too, by the way. You don't see Lotuses very often in America, and once in a while, I get to see one, and it's like a real treat, you know? Like,
nice.
I remember as a kid, I saw an Esprit V8 Turbo or whatever at a Taco Bell one time, and I just lost it. I was like, oh, my God.
Grand Turismo 4 car, that. They're brilliant on Grand Turismo 4.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, you don't really, even though we live in Britain, you know, they're not on every street corner either. So it's still an event. Still an event where they made Justin.
I assumed that they were like Corvette, because I see Corvettes everywhere. So I assumed, you know, Lotuses are kind of like your version of Corvettes.
A Corvette's much more practical, so you can use it as a daily. I think the Lotus is a bit more of a hobby.
I think the Lotus are hugely popular as well in like British club racing, because there's a big David versus Goliath effect. So you have like Lotuses, which are lightweight, low power, but faster in the corners against big, you know, BMW M3s and stuff like that. That'll be quicker on the straights, slower in the corners. So you do. I see them a lot around the country, but less so much on the road.
Mm. Nice. All right. Well, that's two good contenders, both from Assetto Corsa, and I'm afraid mine isn't from that game. So I've gone an alternative route, and mine is new, as new as you can get. It's also a bit weird. So without further ado, it is Toyota Yaris, but it is the Toyota GR Yaris, which stands for Gazoo Racing, which is a very terrible name. And unfortunately, Justin, this car is not going to be available in the United States, but it is going to be available in Europe. And I'm very excited about it. So, in essence, it's a Toyota Yaris hatchback. But it was made like the Porsche 911 GT1 that John discussed for homologation purposes. So, in order to get their WRC car more aerodynamic, they decided to make a special three-door Yaris with a tapered roof at the rear. Unfortunately, the rules have changed. And so now, actually, that rally car won't ever see the light of day, which makes it even cooler for me. Yeah, so here's a homologation road car that you can actually go out and buy, not in limited numbers, and its purpose doesn't exist anymore. But what you end up with is a four-wheel drive turbocharged Yaris with a manual gearbox. It's got a manual old-school handbrake that disengages a four-wheel drive system, so you can do handbrake turns, specifically designed for that purpose. You can select the amount of power going between the front and rear wheels, the bias. It's got the most powerful 1.6-litre engine of all time. It's got a carbon fibre roof. And unlike every other Yaris, which is made in a production line in France, this is hand-finished in Japan. And so just the fact that it exists in this day and age, before electric cars come in, it's one final flourish. And it reminds me of the Subaru Imprezas and the Mitsubishi Evos that no longer exist. It's a modern day version of those. So it's in Gran Turismo Sport, and I work. Yeah, I'm on commission. I would actually really like to buy one in real life, but we'll have to see how that works out in the future. But it came on the day it was sort of allowed. The press were allowed to talk about it in terms of reviews at the end of last year. It came to Gran Turismo Sport on the same day, and it's just really good fun to play. And then the rally version that will never see the light of day is in WRC 9, which is a nice little Easter egg update that came in December. So that is my favorite car in real life, and it also happens to be in a couple of video games, but I understand it's a bit niche and a bit weird. But it's really good fun to drive. There you go.
I'll start off. I absolutely love it. I love the idea of the Yaris because it's so much better when you take a car that shouldn't be something crazy, you know, something like a hatchback, you know, something you don't expect, and then turn it into, you know, like a good example for me was always the Fiat 500 of Barth. I thought that was one of the coolest cars ever when the road version came out, because it's like, it reminds me of like a little angry terrier that's just barking like mad and thinks it's a monster, thinks it could take down all these Labradors, but really it's just a little plucky, shouty thing, and anyone could pick it up. And I feel like that's what a lot of these kind of hot hatches do. Yep. And when you get something like a homologation special that's going to be so rare, that's going to, you know, the performance figures are staggering, the build quality is staggering. Toyota obviously are possible. I think they are the biggest car manufacturer in the world, so they've got a lot of resources.
Yeah, I can't see how they're making any profit on this at all either. You know, it doesn't make any sense.
I
which
love
makes it even better.
Exactly, and the fact that this is no longer happening because the rule change makes it even better. Yep. I agree, and it's maybe a bit of a sad reason that, you know, to like something because it's exclusive is a little bit pathetic. But it's really cool.
Yeah,
really, really want it in America desperately.
Yeah.
I would buy one if I could. And in fact, I know for a fact, Gran Turismo commentator Tom Brooks has bought one. If I'm not mistaken.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
Yep. Which I have told him I am. Yeah, I am ultra jealous about that. I have signed the what is it called, the thing to the petition to bring the GR Yaris to America. I have signed that. I've gone to the Toyota website and they have a website specifically set up that says the Gazoo Racing Yaris is not coming to North America. But give us your email and we'll let you know if anything happens in the future. Totally gave them
sell
my
you
email.
Camry instead.
Right. But I would buy that car in a heartbeat. It is. I think you're right. Yeah. I think it's right at the end of an era of
cool
100 years.
Yeah.
Exactly. And I think not only is it an incredible car, I think it'll be worth twice what it costs in about 10 years. It'll be worth an incredible amount of money.
Yeah. Oh, that's cool. It's a shame that you're not going to get it in America, Justin, and your import laws are really weird, so you can't import it until it's 25 years old, I think.
Yep.
But, you know, in the future you might be able to. However, America does get the new 60. Nissan Z and the Subaru BRZ that we don't get, so, you know. You win some, you lose some. We're not going to get those anymore. We do get the current one, but the new one we're not going to get anymore because of emissions regulations and stuff like this. Yep.
Gotcha.
Right, well, moving on. Because I think we've talked a lot about our favorite games, favorite cars in games quite a lot. Let's talk about ones that are a bit underrated that you might not think are good in the game, but are. So over to you, John. What's your pick?
Thank you. So I am kind of sticking to my guns and going with what I know and kind of my experience. And I think it kind of stems, the reason the car is maybe underrated is kind of stems from the fact that this game is not so popular in a lot of aspects, and that is it's from the Project Cars series. Now, I have a soft spot for Project Cars because I feel like it actually does hit a really nice compromise market of people that want to get into sim racing and want the diversity that sim racing brings that's not just Formula One, but actually is accessible to people that aren't as experienced, because it is a bit easier to get the hang of, although on the limits it can be very weird and the curbs feel like sheet ice. So I feel like Project Cars was kind of misread, and I think mismarketed is probably more of the better way of describing. I think they tried to aim for the wrong target market when actually it works really nice as a compromise. Either way, within Project Cars 2, this is when I first discovered this, there was a DLC pack that was released, which was celebrating Japanese classics. And in that DLC pack, there was a Nissan Skyline, I believe R32 or R34, Group A touring car. So the one from the very early 90s. So if you've seen the video of the Bathurst race with the Skyline heading into the wall race, all that kind of stuff, definitely go and watch that.
But, Jim Richards called everyone a pack of assholes.
Yeah, go on YouTube, Jim Richards Bathurst, you'll find it all. Anyway, that car was released as a DLC for Project Cars 2, so it slipped in under the radar, and oh my goodness, I played it with a direct drive wheel in VR, and I absolutely fell in love with this. And of course, Project Cars, not necessarily the best physics, but with the direct drive wheel and this car, I honestly felt it was similar to what I said before, but it felt so alive, and I felt like I was driving the car. It had four-wheel drive, which made it sound like the other group days touring cars, but you could absolutely drive it on the back end, four wheels sliding around all the corners, and I would stick on a race around Sugo or even the Nordschleife, and I could just sit there for days and days driving this car. It was so fun on the limit of grip, and it made you feel like a better driver because the car was so easy to drive. It made you feel like you were doing something good when actually it was just the car being good. So for me, the reason it's underrated is not necessarily because many people talk about it. It's more because I think it's within a game that's maybe overlooked a wee bit in terms of enjoying driving experiences. And this is an incredibly good experience if you can find it.
That's a good way of thinking about it, actually, that it's in an underrated game and as DLC. So therefore, not many people have experienced it, including myself. I actually think I have the DLC, but I've not tried that car yet, so...
I wouldn't describe the game necessarily as underrated, more that kind of misunderstood and mismarketed. Oh, okay, right. So, but I think that I just think that you don't go in Project Cars expecting the best ultimate driving experience, and there is a hidden gem in there if you have the right DLC. Mm. There's some other cars in that DLC that are absolutely awful. I should also point out the ones that you would get first, the kind of cool-looking concept cars, and they drive like, I can't say the words in the podcast, but the Group A Skyline is absolutely sensational. Absolutely, yeah.
Oh, nice. And what about your choice, Justin? Is it another R32 Skyline, or is it something different?
No. Thankfully, there's no similarities between John's pick and mine this time. In fact, I'm going to be the first person to pick a car from iRacing, weirdly.
Nice.
I don't have a ton of experience in iRacing, but I do have some. I've done some league racing in iRacing. I tended to do more league racing rather than, just jumping into the sessions. I never cared much about iRating and safety rating and all that kind of stuff. But the car that I enjoyed the most, which got raced very, very little, was the Mustang. And I don't know if there's been a new one introduced, but it's the FR500S. I was driving this. This was years ago when I would have been driving it, like 6 years ago, something like that. So, this is not a new car by any means, but I think that means it's quite cheap on iRacing. It might be one of those ones that you can pick up for $5, or maybe it's even free at this point. I actually don't know. Go check out iRacing if you guys have the time and to see if it's included. It's one of the few cars that I found, things change in terms of like the tire model and stuff like that from iRacing. Right. So I don't know if this is still consistent today, but when I was driving that Mustang FR500S, it was one of the few cars in iRacing where you could let the back end step out a little bit and you could actually control it. You could counter steer and survive, come out the other end. iRacing's oversteer, historically anyway, because I haven't played it recently, historically is quite snappy. The back end goes and it's gone. You're not catching it. I don't care how fast your reaction times are. I don't care if you have a direct drive wheel. You're not catching anything. It's over. You're in a wall. You're done. The Mustang was one of the few cars that I found that I could actually let the back end, you could enter a corner with a bit of oversteer. You could correct it. You could come out the other side. And I think it's a car that a lot of people don't even think about. It's also not super duper fast. Mustangs aren't fast. You guys know that. Mustangs are super fast cars already.
In a straight line, maybe, sometimes.
Right. I mean, it's
outside
maybe
of cars and coffee, they're very fast to have a crash.
Right, exactly. I mean, I would be very interested to compare lap times between the FR500S and the MX-5, for example. I don't think the lap times would be that massively different. Speaking of David and Goliath's sort of motor racing, there's another great example. But the Mustang, I think, is one of those cars, especially because iRacing gets so focused on the modern fast stuff, like the F1 cars, the Indy cars, the NASCAR Cup Series cars, the GT3 cars, the LMP cars. Right. These are like the bread and butter of people that play iRacing, that do iRacing. Mm-hmm. You see a lot fewer people getting into the kind of weird, you know, like they have the Lotus 49, the Lotus 79. They have all sorts of really weird cars in iRacing that just never get used anymore by anybody.
Right. Yeah, no, that's a shame.
The Solstice. Yeah, they have the Solstice in there too. There's just a bunch of really, really weird cars. And I think the Mustang is sort of like the best of those because it's just easy to drive. And I think people focus too much on a challenge. You know what I mean? They're like, oh, I want to have a challenge. I want to be fighting the car and, you know, have that sense of accomplishment when you can string together a lap. I don't want that. I just want to go out there and drive around, you know? I'm not looking to put in 3 hours just to make sure that the setup is good enough that I'm not going to fall off the course. So the Mustang was one of those cars. You could go in with the default setup. You could let the back end out a little bit. And you may not be competitive, but you're going to get around and you're not going to crash.
It's approachable and fun. Yeah.
Exactly. And I think more people should really experience the Mustang, especially if it is free. Again, I don't know if it is, but it's definitely cheap.
I'll add it to my list. Free. Yeah, nice. Oh, that sounds good. You've sold it to me. So we've got so far then a Mustang in iRacing, and we've got a classic 90s Group A touring car, Skyline, from Project Cars 2 DLC, which is a very obscure choice. Good. I like it.
Hence why it's very niche.
Is it available in Project Cars 3, did you say? Sorry.
It is, yeah, but play it on Project Cars 2 because...
Yeah, they handle so differently in those games that... Yeah. Yeah, that's a whole other podcast. All right, so my underrated car is a slightly obscure Japanese sports car, not from a company you might be thinking of. So John's mentioned a Nissan Skyline GTR. This isn't that, but imagine a Skyline GTR, an R34 one in particular, that was mid-engined. And what you actually get is what's called a Tommy Kyra ZZ2. Now, this is in Gran Turismo 3, 4, 5, and 6, and it was only a concept car from a small Japanese manufacturer called Tommy Kyra, and they only made one, and unfortunately the project didn't get enough funding, and they never made the production version. That's kind of a theme with my car so far, the kind of weird, obscure curios. But this is a sports car. It looks really nice, but it's got the Nissan mechanicals in a mid-engine form, and tuned to about 500 horsepower to start with, and then you can tune it up from there. So you've got a more headroom from a tuning point of view, but because it's got the four-wheel drive and the mid-engined balance, it handled beautifully. So handling is really important for me, and that was just a really enjoyable car, but it's often overlooked. It doesn't exist in modern games anymore, unfortunately, but it's a great one to do many events in Gran Turismo with, and I highly recommend it. The Tommy Kyra ZZ2. Anyone heard of it?
I remember driving it.
Oh, nice.
Like, for me, it's actually really nice to hear it because I remember driving the car and I know it as a Gran Turismo car. You know, one of those ones where you don't know of it other than a Gran Turismo. But I didn't know about the Nissan link, and you've educated me, so thank you.
I think the plan was to make their own engine and do their own thing, but the one version that they made had the R34 engine from the Skyline, and it never progressed from that, so that's what it has in the game. And that's how the project ended, unfortunately. Nice. I'm glad other people have heard of it, though. That's good.
Yeah. I definitely remember using it.
Ah, good. Yeah, nice. That's cool.
I think it's ugly, personally, though. That's the only thing. I don't think it's that pretty.
Beauty is in the eye of the beholder, John, and looks are purely subjective. There we go. We'll just leave it at that. So we've had our current sort of favorite cars. We've had ones that are sort of underrated, but we still love, and you've heard our... pitches for those, and now we're going to go for something that's a bit overpowered, something we really like but sort of dominated the game. So let's go John again. What's your pick for this category?
I mean, I would want to go down the route of Mercedes W11 in 2020, the Mercedes W10 in 2019, etc., all the way back to 2014.
We all know the story there.
So I am going to instead go with the mighty Battle Bus from Wreckfest. The reason it's overpowered is because we have played enough games of Wreckfest with enough people to know that if you see a battle bus, you might as well cry and start reversing because there's just nothing you can do about it. It's front bucket alone is the most overpowered object ever been created for video game use. And I have nightmares of that battle bus heading towards me into a car. And yeah, it's ridiculous, and it takes so long to get in the game that anyone who has it has got an unfair advantage. And can you tell this is really hits a personal spot with me?
Yeah,
I'm getting nervous. Actually, I'm going to stop there.
But often it has to be said, driven the wrong way around a track as well. Mm-hmm. But that's all part of the fun with it, right? For me, I don't mind it when I see someone in it. You know, adds an extra level of challenge to the race. I see where you're coming from. It's very frustrating when you're leading something and in the last second someone's going the wrong way in a battle bus, and it's like, oh no, I can see where this is going. That's what makes Rex Fest so special, though. So,
I mean, I love the battle bus. I have a love hate relationship with it.
Yeah,
you know, the question was whether it was overpowered, and I mean, to me, it feels overpowered because I've never had the pleasure of driving one, so maybe I'm just petty, but it feels very strong.
So it's like the Marmite vehicles of video games. I like it. Nice.
It's like the Marmite, but I love Marmite and I don't like battle buses.
Oh, you love Marmite. A lot of people don't like it, so a lot of people don't like it.
You know, I'm actually also allergic. I've become allergic to Marmite, so I love it, but I'm allergic to it. So it's like a Marmite example within Marmite. We're getting really deep here, but
I have a lot of people. Very meta. Yeah. Perhaps moving away from Marmite. Justin, do you even know what that is?
Yes, I've heard of Marmite. Okay. I have not tasted it. I'm a very picky eater. I don't like many things. Yeah, maybe. We'll see. My OP car, and I actually had a hard time thinking about this one, especially because I was trying to think of something in a more recent game, and I think games more recently have done a better job of balancing their cars. For example, I nearly put this isn't my selection, but this is a close second. In F1 2012, the Sauber was better online than the rest of the cars, even if you had equal cars. Yeah, even if you had equal cars on, there was just something about the Sauber online that was just made it a little bit quicker. And I remember I was racing in a league at the time, and depending on your seed, your qualifying to get into the league would determine your choice of car. And I just missed out on having first choice of car. So I got second choice of car, and I ended up picking the Lotus. But I wanted the Sauber desperately, of course, as a Sergio Perez fan, and because it was an overpower. Yeah, so I really, 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 really wanted that car, but I ended up with the Lotus, which was a beautiful car in F1 2013, nice or 2012. Yeah, exactly. Gorgeous livery. I love the black and red and gold. I think it's absolutely iconic. Yeah. So moving on from that, I actually ended up choosing in Forza Horizon 4, first and only car that I'm choosing in Forza Horizon 4. There is one car that I found myself picking for a lot of events because I was thinking, you know, what car do I pick? And some people might think that I'm going to say the Jaguar D-Type because that car can go 280 miles an hour or whatever it is if you tune it right. But no, because that's only good for a top speed run, which is very rare. You don't do a lot of top speed runs in Forza Horizon. The car that I ended up picking a lot was the 1958 Austin Healey Sprite Mark I.
Wow, that is weird.
Yeah. I tuned that thing into an S1 rally car, all-wheel drive, S1 class. So we're talking 600 horsepower in that tiny, tiny little body. And with the all-wheel drive, there's just something about that car. It's sort of similar to the Exige, actually. It's very pointy because it's so light and the wheelbase is so short.
Yeah, light British sports car.
Direction really, really quickly in it. But then because it has no weight over the back wheels and it's just extremely, you know, full of power, as soon as you get on the throttle, it just, the back end steps out and you are just sideways at a 45-degree angle for the rest of the corner. And there was just something about it where I could take it to the drift zones. For those that are unfamiliar, in the open world of Forza Horizon, you have these zones where you drift in it, and you know, depending on the speed and the angle of your drift, you accumulate more points, and you have leaderboards and stuff, so you can compare yourself to your friends, see who got a higher score. Almost all of my top drift runs were in that Austin Healey Sprite. Almost every single one of them is in that Austin Healey.
Do you know that Austin Healey's as well, and even nowadays, obviously it's such an old car now, but even in current motorsport, they still use Austin Healey's in hill climbing and sprints. I've competed against them on multiple occasions, and they're awesome little cars, really, really overlooked, kind of like the original Mini, where you still see them going, and they're still competitive, and they just look like so much fun. I guess it's like the 60s, 50s version of an MX-5.
Yeah, and I don't know what it is about the version that's in Forza Horizon 4, but it just, and again, especially as all-wheel drive, because your tune does matter a lot in Forza, right. The way you, not just the way you tune the car, but the way you upgrade the car as well, whether that's with wider tires or more horsepower, because both will increase the PI of the car. So you have to, you know, it's a trade-off. Do you want more horsepower? Do you want more grip? That kind of stuff. So, you know, my tune in particular may have just struck a perfect balance, which would have been completely by luck, by the way. I am not like a scientist when it comes to tuning on Horizon games or anything like that. So I would have lucked into this tune, but there's just something about it that's just really easy. And you know what I mean? In fact, I've just realized that all three of my choices are easy to drive cars. I have picked three extremely easy to drive cars. The Exige, like I said, you can go full throttle at corner exit. You don't have to worry about the back end. The Mustang I mentioned is very forgiving when the back end goes out compared to other iRacing cars. And same thing here, that Austin Healey, you could just go full throttle sideways through a corner and it just kind of magically grips. And I don't know. It's one of those cars that you're steering it with the throttle as well too, which I love that about that car.
Yeah. I love that as well. Yeah.
When you can, just control it with your foot. It's really, really nice. And super responsive. So for anyone that has Forza Horizon 4, Austin Healey Sprite Mark 1, S1 class, all wheel drive, rally tires, take it onto some dirt. It's incredible. Or on asphalt, actually, even with the rally tires on asphalt, it's great for drifting. It's not competitive, but still great for drifting.
Nice. I would never have guessed you would say the words Austin Healey on this podcast. There we go. That happened. All right. Well, that's two very different choices, isn't it? A bus and an Austin Healey. And I've gone what I thought would be what everyone else would say. I actually thought everyone's going to say this. And before we recorded, let you into a little secret, our producer did actually say this car. And I've gone for it. It's very straight down the middle and very predictable. I'm going to go for, it's a second Gran Turismo car. Apologies. Oh, third even. Oh, wow. Okay. It is the Suzuki V6 Escudo Pikes Peak Special 1998. And I had to read that out because it's a very long name. But in essence, this is a Pikes Peak hill climb car driven by Japanese driver Monster Tajima. And it's kind of a Suzuki. I mean, it's called Escudo, but other markets might know it as Vitara. But really, it's not. It's a space-famed chassis. And you could tune this to well over 1,000 horsepower, and it would go so quick on the long oval in Gran Turismo 3 that the front wheels would actually take off. You'd break the track. Physics engine of the game. On the test track, you could almost get it to fly. That's without modding the game or anything. And you could use that for so many events. And actually, I think there was different variations. I think it might have been first in Gran Turismo 2 or an Escudo Pikes Peak was in that game, certainly, because Pikes Peak Hill Climb was in Gran Turismo 2 in the first PlayStation. But certainly for me, it was on the PlayStation 2 era Gran Turismo games where that car was OP and you could use it in a lot of events, especially four-wheel drive events, because it counted. And the wing was bigger than the Battle Bus in Wreckfest alone. So I absolutely adored that car. And also, just if you watch videos of it in real life, it is just as crazy, which is even better. But it was a cheap car in many ways.
I would say it's possibly one of the most iconic racing game cars because it was quite understated. There is Formula cars in Gran Turismo. There's high-end Le Mans cars. And why does this one random dirt car outperform everything and do something that breaks the physics? I love that about it. And they didn't get rid of it. They kept the same issue in Gran Turismo 2. I'm pretty sure it did the same thing in Gran Turismo 2 and then through 3 and 4. And for me, obviously it's, overpowered is one word, one way of putting it. But for me, it's just super iconic because of how unique it is.
Yeah. Nice. So, I think we've had a smorgasbord of weird and wonderful cars there, and I think you've all heard our impassioned rants about why we love them so much. But just to finish off, I think we should quickly go through something that's a bit older, some sort of favourite retro car. So, again, John, have you got a car from an older game, perhaps, that you have?
I do. And when I say older game, it's the same franchise as you just discussed, Tom, went to your overpowered car. And it's a car that I know from my childhood favorite game, my favorite game of all time, quite possibly, which is Gran Turismo 4. And this car was a car that when you first see it, you don't know what the heck's going on, especially when you're a young kid and they're not aware of old-fashioned motorsport. And then you jump in the fridge and you start driving this fridge or washing machine, and suddenly you start overtaking everyone around you and doing 200 miles an hour down the Strait of Le Mans, passing two prototypes. So the car I'm going to go with, and I'm sure if you've played this game, you'll possibly have gone through the same experience, is the Chaparral 2J, which was the box in Gran Turismo 4. It took you a while. But yeah, you just jump in the washing machine and tumble past your opposition.
Nice. Wow.
I haven't thought about that car in like 20 years or something. That is such a throwback. I have not. And wasn't it like good a show. Two-speed? Wasn't it a two-speed?
Yeah.
I think it had gears.
In the first gear, you can outpace like Mazda 787B down the Balsan Strait, and you're just sitting there in your washing machine on super fast. The clothes are as dry as they've ever been before.
Nice. That's a good one. Can you beat that, Justin?
So I went really old school. Need for Speed 2. I think the special edition in particular, this is a really, really weird car. And I'm picking this car not because it was good in the game. It wasn't a good car in the game, I don't think. It wasn't even a good car in real life. But it was just super duper interesting. And I've always fallen in love with it and secretly admired it and wish they would bring it back. It is the Ford GT90. Something about the Ford GT90. With its quad exhaust and its quad turbos and its ceramic parts. Yeah, it was so bizarre. It was so space age. It looked like something out of, a sci-fi movie. Like 2001 A Space Odyssey would have a Ford GT90 in it or something. Like, it was just such a weird car. And again, it wasn't good in the Need for Speed game. And it wasn't good in real life. They never made it. It was crap. But there's just something about that car that I wish they, had fixed it or modernized it or something. I love the GT90.
There's a video somewhere of Clarkson driving it, I think, on YouTube, if you dig hard enough.
I haven't seen that.
From the mid-90s, yeah, it's from an old episode of something. But it was a weird car, and it was kind of like, this is what a GT of the future could look like.
Well, I would say that it's almost like a car that was built in the late 90s, I believe. But it's like it's almost as if it's what if you were to say now, design a 2020 supercar as if never seen a 2020 supercar. That's kind of where you would go, right? Because it's like new styling and sharp edges, but with old materials. And it's that really
whiff of Bugatti to it, doesn't it? It's got the number of turbos and the orgy of numbers that it represents. It's very Bugatti-ish.
Yeah.
Which Need for Speed was it in again?
Need for Speed 2. And I think it was like Need for Speed 2 Special Edition. I don't know what console, but I had it on PC.
Yeah.
I had it on one of the 3.1 or something. Yeah. came on disc. Yeah.
Nice. Oh, well, my retro one is a bit newer than that, but it's a bit older than John's. It's in a couple of games, both of which came out in 1998. And just as I was sort of joking about you mentioning Forza Horizon, Justin, I'm going to mention a rally game. So this was in both Sega Rally 2 in the arcade and also Colin McRae Rally at home on PC and PlayStation, came out in the same year. And it's, of course, the
Celica.
Subaru. Yeah, it's the Celica. No. Good shout. It's actually the Subaru Impreza, specifically the two-door one with the dark blue livery and the gold wheels, which came from tobacco advertising. Actually. So
the 22B, was it?
And the 22B was the road car version. Yep, absolutely.
Was it 555 was the, 555 the tobacco sponsor?
Yeah, we shouldn't be talking about that so much, I don't think. But that's how the iconic livery came about. we don't condone it, but that's what the livery color came from, and it's the colors that I think that this is a great retro car, because modern Subarus, actually in America this year they came back with a similar sort of livery, but for many years, just in the 90s, that was the car. It also made a really unique noise because it had a boxer engine, and nothing else really has a boxer engine, so it sounded different and it looked spectacular with the livery. So I've gone for a livery more than anything, but that is my retro car of choice.
I like that you specified the two, because it was a four-door,
but the two-door with the wide arches, the 22B one, that was the really
cool one. Oh, yeah. I'm flustered now.
that car for me, the more time, it's one of those rare cars where the more often I see it, the more I fall in love with it. And I think the two-door specific version has gone for me from being one of my like favorite rally cars to literally one of my all-time favorite cars, full stop. And I don't think it's ever going to get worse, because it gets prettier and prettier every single year.
But there was something about it being slightly square, blocky in the older games as well that had a certain sort of appeal, even though it doesn't look as realistic as it does now in like a modern game.
Bottom than it was at the top. So even though it was kind of blocky, you know, and the angles were a little bit sharp to it, it still had that like aggressive racing. There was a little bit, if I remember correctly, a little bit of a rake to the body as well, where the hood was just ever so slightly lower than the back end of the car, which again just gives it like it looks like it's going fast still.
Right.
Yeah, great. And it had that great pick.
That big wing at the back and the air scoop on the bonnet, you know, and the massive shotgun of the exhaust, so that was a car for me. Well, that's certainly been a lively debate, although we didn't really disagree with each other, but that's all part of the fun. We all clearly love the cars that we chose there. That's it for this week's Traction Podcast. Thank you very much for listening. As always, if you're listening to the audio version, please subscribe via your favorite podcast app. And if you're on YouTube, be sure to like and subscribe. You can also leave a comment with your favorite racing game car and tell us how wrong we were on the YouTube comments or on TractionGG, the website, in the comments section there too. As ever, go faster.